Hi, welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 76 for January 21st, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes...
He stands for integrity, truth, friendship, love of humankind, love of his fellow man, human rights, all of these things. He stands for everything. We don't have Shakespeare suppers or Longfellow lunches. We have Burns suppers because there is a message that he can still tell the world today.
That's David Sibbald, who carries on the legend of Robert Burns as a speaker and scholar. This Thursday, January 25th, marks the 248th anniversary of Burns' birth, and it's a day steeped in tradition for Scots and Burns lovers around the world. More details in a few minutes, but first, let's look at the news. Two new distribution deals mean more people will now have access to more whiskeys. First, William Grant & Sons has reached a deal with Suntory to handle distribution for Glenfiddich, Grants, and other Grant products in Australia. Second, Blackadder has a new importer for its independent bottlings in the U.S. Joe Howell at Federal Wine & Spirits in Boston will be bringing Blackadder whiskeys into the U.S., both for sale at the Boston store and for distribution in other markets. You'll find the appropriate links at WhiskeyCast.com. Issue number 61 of Whiskey Magazine is now off the presses and in the post. Editor Rob Allinson's focus this time around is on bourbon.
The front cover is quite striking. It has the Buffalo Trace logo on it because inside we have tasted all of their vintage collection, which has gone down very well with Dave. It seems to like particularly the Thomas Handy Sazerac, which he definitely enjoyed. So we've got that in there. There's a piece on where the future lies for bourbon distilling and how it's actually keeping up with demand. I took a trip out to Louisville last year and went to the Bluegrass Cooperage. So there's two pages on rolling out the barrel at one of the world's largest cooperages, and that was a good trip. You really learn to appreciate how they make barrels there. Dominic has been up to the two distilleries that supply Ballantine's, their whiskies for their blend. So there's a long feature and a tasting of those, which is a good read. We've looked at how you pair whiskey and cigars together, and we've come up with some interesting decisions on that, particularly how you actually manage to pair an Isla with a cigar, because it's quite hard to pair sometimes those two things. You need a good heavy cigar. Visitor's Guide to Speyside, all you need to know. For Northern Speyside, we've decided to split the area down because it is so big. Reports from both South Africa and Holland, the whiskey lives there, which again have just been phenomenal. A large amount of visitors have been. And we'll take a trip to Italy to look at the Italian passion for collecting whiskey over there. And one not to miss, round about page 50, is the Icon Awards, and that's the American regional winners and the Japanese regional winners. Now these guys will go on to compete against Scotland and Ireland and the rest of the world for the Ultimate Icons, which will be held later this year. And our special tastings this time have been rum finishes. So we've got about three or four good rum finished whiskies, which Dave and Martin have tasted and seem to have enjoyed. It's thrown up some interesting results anyway.
By the way, the winter edition of Malt Advocate magazine is also available now. Editor and publisher John Hansel will give us the details in an upcoming episode. The Scotch Whiskey Association has unveiled a new website. Of course, the SWA is the principal industry group for Scotch distillers, but the new site also has recipes and tourism information as well. There's a link at WhiskeyCast.com. I need to make a correction at this point. For the last several episodes, I've been talking about Dramfest 07 in Christchurch, New Zealand, and I've been saying it was scheduled for January 23rd and 24th. But it's actually February 23rd and 24th, and Michael Fraser Milne of the Whiskey Galore Shop in Christchurch gives us the details.
It's a two-day event, Friday, Saturday. The Friday is basically a big introductory garden party we're having here at the historic home with seven whiskies and seven foods with a band and all the rest of it. Then we have seven whiskey experts coming out from Scotland for the event. So we've got Billy Walker from Benriach, and we've got Alec Bruce from Adelphi, and various other ones. And we're really looking forward to it. It's going to be a cracking night. And then on a Saturday, we've got 26 or so importers showing their wares, about 280 different whiskies in the town hall. We've got master classes with the experts from Scotland and various other events. Nosing classes. We've got a nosing competition, cocktail competitions, etc., etc.
Tell me about the nosing competitions. It sounds interesting.
Well, it's a team of three, we'll put together a panel of whiskies there for them to nose and taste and spit if they wish, and they'll have to initially tell us the region and the different aspects of the whiskey, anything they can decipher, really, and then we'll have a, if necessary, if there's anybody, it's our point system, if they get enough points, you know, to go through the finals, then we might have to have a nose off. But it's quite simple, really. It's not a hard concept. It's really quite simple. Yeah.
How many people do you expect to attend?
So far, between the various events, we've got about 700 booked, and we'll be disappointed if between the sort of Friday night, the Saturday, and the master classes, if we didn't get, you know, 800 or 900 altogether, we'd be quite disappointed. But that's big for New Zealand. You know, we've only got 4 million people here, so if we do that, we'll be very happy. Yeah, very happy indeed.
Now, one does not normally think of New Zealand as a whiskey consuming or producing nation, but in fact, you guys have a history with whiskey that goes way back, right?
Well, some of the Dewar's, you'll be aware of Dewar's whiskies. Tommy Dewar came out here in 1907, and they had a whole lot of cousins out here, and managed to persuade a few of them to import Dewar's. Glenlivet came here first in 1902, which is very early for a malt, and Glenfarclas has been here since 1939. So, and not all the time, but you know, that was when it was first imported. So there's a long history here, there is. Yeah. And there are, you know, it's a whiskey drinking nation.
And you have some distilleries there on the island too, right?
One small one down Timaru at the moment. We did have a big one down Dunedin. It's closed at the moment, but we're looking. There's a chap opening another one very soon, so we hope we manage to get that off the ground. It would be great.
Now, if someone wanted to come down to Dramfest in Christchurch, how far is it to get there?
Well, Christchurch is in the South Island. There's two islands in New Zealand, two main islands. And, I mean, if you're coming from the United States, it's a 12-hour flight from Los Angeles. You can fly in here no problem at all. And, yeah, we'd love to see you. There's a website which is dedicated to the Dramfest, which is simply www.dramfest.co.nz. And, you know, it tells you all the information on there. We'd love to see some people down here. In fact, we will have some people from America because Christchurch is the base for the American Antarctic program. And a lot of the chaps that go down to Antarctica will be coming back, as it happens, in time for Dramfest, and some of them are whiskey fans, so they will have a North American contingent there.
Other events coming up over the next few weeks. The Victoria Whiskey Festival is this coming weekend in Victoria, British Columbia, followed by the Linköpings Whiskey Expo in Linköping, Sweden on February 2nd and 3rd, the International Malt Whiskey Festival in Ghent, Belgium on February 10th and 11th, and Whiskey Live Tokyo on February 18th. Of course, you'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. Every January 25th, whiskey lovers raise a glass, or a few glasses, to honor one of Scotland's legends. Robert Burns was born January 25th, 1759, in Alloway. He only lived 37 years, but he accomplished more in those 37 years than many of his contemporaries did in twice that long. The first Burns Supper was held in 1801, 5 years after his death. Today, Burns Suppers are held all over the world, and Lafroy Distillery manager John Campbell will be one of those toasting Burns' memory on Isla Thursday night.
Well, what we do, the local village, we hold a burned supper, and what we do, we get the frog as the toast to the haggis. So we're involved that way.
And how do you guys do the toast to the haggis? What are you guys going to do on Thursday night?
Well, what happens is you have a burned supper. So it's a very traditional meal in Scotland on January 25th. You come in and you always, it starts off with a grace, and then we pipe the haggis into the top table, and then when you cut it open with the knife, you toast the haggis, and so you use the Lafroig to toast the haggis.
How many people will be there?
Maybe about 150 people, and there'll be all sorts of events, probably going over the island as well.
Now, you guys have posted a website with a bunch of things for people who want to have their own Burns dinner, right?
Yeah, because it's a very traditional part of Scotland, so I mean, there are a lot of ex-Scots or second-generation Scots all out through the world. So if they want to kind of hold their own, they can through these kind of guidelines we gave out.
There's a link to Lafroig's Burns tribute on the WhiskeyCast website. But to put the man into historical perspective, we turn to David Sibbald, who has made Burns' life and legend his passion.
It goes way back to my ancestors. I am descended from John Murdoch, who was Burns' tutor, and was always told that. But really, my interest didn't come to the fore until I joined the Glasgow Haggis Club, which is a Burns club. And there I heard gentlemen get up and recite Burns, and the words just spoke to me. And from there, it just grew and grew.
Now, tell me about the legend of Robert Burns. A lot of people know, basically, he's 247th, or this is the 247th, I believe, or anniversary of his birth this year, or 246th. But a lot of people really don't know that much about Robert Burns.
Well, son of a tenant farmer, in a time of great change in Scotland, and great change in the world, in fact, because the Industrial Revolution was just starting, and that meant great changes in the social fabric of life. The strict Calvinist Kirk was... there was an opposite church coming up which was more liberally minded. In Scotland, we were being absorbed into England, and all Scotticisms and all Scottish writing was being frowned upon. And Burns grew up in this society to get out of the struggling farmer existence, turned to poetry. And that's where his words have meant so much to the world, because although he spoke a lot about local events, a lot of it is universal
and
in its
explain
outlook.
The Burns connection with whiskey. We know that he was a gauger, and from what I've been told in the past, he probably wasn't a particularly good gauger, because he probably drank more than he seized. Is that fair to say?
You know, there are lots of tales about his womanizing and his drinking, and when you look at the fact that in the last 4 years of his life he wrote something like 200 songs, he couldn't have drunk all that much. I dare say he was sociable, he liked friends, and where you would meet them would be in pubs and taverns and inns, and he would frequent them. But I honestly think that his drinking habits have been exaggerated. In those days, now you'll know all about the Boston Tea Party, in those days people drank claret, red wine, or ale, because the water was unsanitary, and really drinking would be a common occurrence in those days. It was only after tea came in that a non-alcoholic beverage was safe to drink. Burns was involved with the whiskey in that he wrote Scotch Drink, a poem about drink, how it loosens the tongue and aids conversation and all the benefits of whiskey, how it is a pure drink. He also wrote to William Pitt, the Prime Minister. William Pitt had put an unfair tax on the Scottish distillers. and there was no tax put on London gin. So this was, from an English point of view, to favour the gin market and the London distillers rather than the Scottish whisky distillers. And Robert Burns wrote to William Pitt to say this was very unfair and that there should be an equal law for both. So there were two good examples of Burns and drink, and especially whisky.
And in fact, this is one of the few times we're hearing that Burns was really involved in politics too.
Yeah, well, he was very involved in politics, and although he could not vote because only the aristocracy had a vote in those days, and yet Burns, one of the most intelligent men to walk the face of the planet, had no vote. But he mingled with the aristocracy. He wrote to them. He demanded human rights. He demanded a freedom for everybody. He was at the forefront of that. And that's when his later writings come through, that he's very politically minded and very much for the fight for the common man and human rights. If you were caught with a copy of Thomas Paine's book, The Rights of Man, you could have been tried for sedition and sent to Botany Bay. So a lot of Burns' writing was done anonymously, sent to his friends, or published without his name being on it. But because his friends had all the letters and have the poems in his writing, we know that Burns actually wrote these poems and his fight. But it was only after his death that the world began to realise just how much he had done in the fight for freedom. And of course, worldwide, there was the French Revolution, there was the American Revolution. Freedom was a worldwide thing in those days. And Burns was at the forefront of it.
What else do we not know about Robert Burns
that
we should
know? He was more than just a poet. His legacy lives on. His words are as vibrant today as they ever were. And everything about him, really, is an open book. There are countless biographies. And I must say, many of them have got spurious facts about him because they try and make him out to be worse than he is. But really, he stands for integrity, truth, friendship, love of humankind, love of his fellow man, human rights, all of these things. He stands for everything. We don't have Shakespeare suppers or Longfellow lunches. We have Burns suppers because there is a message that he can still tell the world today.
5 years after he died, the first Burns supper was held.
In the cottage that he was born in Alloway, a number of his friends decided that what he stood for was worth continuing. And the tradition started from that, really. From memory, I believe there were 9 people present at that very first Burns supper. And there would be speeches, and they would... I imagine that they would be wanting to continue the legacy and the thoughts that Burns had, and were probably using him because it was safer to use a man that was dead than them speak out against the country and the important people of the day.
Today there's no risk in honouring Burns or his work, but there is a protocol to follow.
There is a format that you can follow loosely. You would generally always eat some form of haggis at whether it's the main course or as a fish course, and you would address the haggis. After the meal, you would have 3 speeches. The first would be the main one of the evening, the immortal memory to Robert Burns, and that would be that orator's view of why Burns' memory should remain immortal. So he can put his own slant on that. He writes his own immortal memory. He can intersperse it with poems. There are songs and recitations throughout. The other 2 speeches are the toast to the lassies and the reply from the lassies. And they are just fun. The men poke fun at the ladies with all their idiosyncrasies. And then in the response, the ladies poke fun at the men with all theirs. And a Burns supper should encapsulate all the emotions that humans encounter. There is the serious bit, there is the fun, there is the sadness in some of the songs of parting. There is fun in the songs. It covers all the gamut of human life. Great nights. Super nights.
As you might expect, this is a busy week for David Sibbald. He'll be speaking at Burns' suppers every night.
Well, Well, I do immortal memories, and I also do recitations. I don't know whether I can plug my CD here or not, but I have a CD, a double CD out of Tam O'Shanter and Holy Willie's Prayer. These are all on the CD, and they are there are sound effects and fiddle in the background. It can be bought on www.robertburns.plusplus.com. I do poems, but I also do immortal memories. I'm doing recitations tonight, and I'll be doing Tam O'Shanter tonight. But on Tuesday night, I'm doing the Rotary Club of Glasgow, and it will be the Immortal Memory on Tuesday night. I tend to stay away from the Toast to the Lassies because you really have to be a bit of a stand-up comic. I do them when I know the audience, but I'm happy of just sticking to the Immortal Memory and to the recitations.
I had a few audio problems recording my interview with David, and while you'll hear one of those problems here, I thought his final words on Robert Burns were too poetic to edit out the glitches.
You cannot class, this is another long answer, but you cannot class Burns as a romantic poet.
What is your favorite Robert Burns poem?
Tam O'Shanter is a narrative full of witchcraft. And that is the greatest narrative poem in the world. Holy Willie's Prayer is satire against the cant and hypocrisy of the narrow church. And that is the greatest short satirical poem ever written. So Aphon Kiss is the greatest love song of parting. My Love is Like a Red, Red Rose is the greatest song of love. So you've got to look at all the facets that he wrote in, and he seems to be able to change and write and give of his best for each style. And there are lovely poems in there. To a Mouse is just so tender. And The Louse is very philosophical. These are all great poems.
If you'd like to find out more about Robert Burns, there are links to several Burns websites at whiskeycast.com. You might also want to go back in the archives and listen to episode 16 from January of last year, where I interviewed Douglas Davidson of Isle of Arran Distillery. That's the only distillery allowed to use Burns' name and image on a bottle of whiskey. That's all for this episode of WhiskeyCast. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.